As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe in Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock Cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
And now, Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and it's Coolest Conversations podcast time, presented by Hard Rock, here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. Today I'm joined by Clem Burke, who rose to fame as the drummer in Blondie, but he's played with a number of different artists over the years, including Bob Dylan, Joan Jett, Pete Townsend, and a number of other bands, including recently the Split Squad and the Empty Hearts. It's the latter who enjoyed a recent Coolest Song in the World with their tune, The Best I Can. That's off their upcoming Wicked Cool Records release titled Second Album and is due out Friday, August the 28th. We'll take a listen to some of that now and then be back on the line with Clem to talk about his career and his time in the Empty Hearts. All as part of your Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
How much can you take from a man? If nothing was left from my hand, now would you still stay here with me? Is that how you
with you again in Little Steven's Underground Garage, and it's time for our Coolest Conversations, and it's a special one indeed, as my guest is the trap slapper extraordinaire, famed drummer Clem Burke, who came to renown in Blondie and has played with a who's who's list of rock and pop artists over the years, including Bob Dylan and Pete Townsend, Iggy Pop, Joan Jett, Wanda Jackson, and many others as well. And these days, in addition to playing in Blondie, he performs in the Empty Hearts, who have this week's coolest song in the world, The Best That I Can. Hi, Clem. How are you?
Hey, buddy. How you doing, Manfred? Great to hear from you. Happy to be on the air with you. I'm doing fine today. Doing fine, considering everything that's going on in this world.
Yeah, I guess we'll touch on some of the wackiness of this world we got going on. Now, you were born November the 24th, 1954, which would make you 9 when the Beatles played Ed Sullivan on February the 9th of 1964. Did you see the Beatles on Ed Sullivan?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, that was Sunday night. You know, the family gathered around the TV to watch the Sullivan Show. I don't think that has happened again, except maybe since the Sopranos were on the Sunday night. I think everyone would gather to watch that, you know, go fast forward 40 years. But, yeah, of course, I saw the Beatles on Sullivan. And, you know, they were like otherworldly. I mean, I've come to know from my friends in the UK, you know, they were really like the boys next door. You know, as far as the English public was concerned, it was almost they were playing a kind of British folk music. But, you know, to us in America, it was like, wow, where did these guys come from? They're from, like, another planet, you know, the way they looked, the music they played. And, of course, the greatest thing about the Beatles was they turned everybody on to what came before, you know, the kids, you know, the Bo Diddleys and the Buddy Holly and people like that, Little Richard, you know, that kind of got lost in the shuffle, and they kind of brought it more to the forefront again, which is an amazing thing that they did for those artists, I think.
Well, were you playing an instrument before you saw the Beatles?
Well, my dad was a drummer, so there were some drums around. I remember going to my grandma's attic and taking out the drums out of her attic that my dad left there before he went to war. So, yeah, you know, the Beatles were inspiring me, though. I was really just trying to get into it, you know, and then I was a big Four Seasons fan, too. So I was looking at Four Seasons' Greatest Hits a lot, which I think is a little prior to the Beatles, I think. Mm-hmm. They were a big influence on me, too.
So you have drumming in your genes there. What? Tell me about your dad for a minute. When did he play drums, and what was he playing drums with?
Well, he had a little kind of society band with his brothers and his father, my grandfather.
Okay.
You know, they play like social events and things like that. Nothing professional, but, you know, he enjoyed it. And, you know, my mom played the piano, and she'd always be singing along to the Top 40 radio in the mornings when I'd be going to school. And, you know, all those kind of things really had a big impact on my influences as a musician. And, you know, it seems like music always brought happiness, you know, in a way. We'd always be fun around the piano in the house and things like that. So, yeah, I mean, it's just great to be able to continue doing it.
Wow. So when you were trying to become a professional drummer, a musician, I mean, your parents were supportive of that?
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of love in my family. Yeah. I mean, anybody who has kids knows that, you know, if a kid has a passion for something, you got to let them go for it, you know. So, you know, it was good. I always say my ambition was to never have a job. You know, so I wound up playing. That's what they call playing, right? You know, I mean, I remember my dad getting up in the morning, going to work every day, you know, and I was like, I'm not sure I want to be doing this. I want to do something different. So, you know, it's a classic thing. It was a way out of my situations in life, and, you know, made my life better. And, you know.
So you were around 20 about the time that Blondie was forming. Had you been in any bands prior to that had done any recording?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We, you know, I've been in bands right after the Beatles, really. You know, in high school, I had one band the first 2 years and another band the second 2 years. And actually, my band, when I was 14, it was Cousin Brucey, who's on the 60s station,
I'm sure
you're aware of. You know, he used to have a thing called Cousin Brucey's Big Break on WABC in New York. And, you know, you sent in a cassette of your band doing a song, and they liked that. They brought you into studios. We went to ABC Studios on 6th Avenue in the 50s. Went in, I remember the amps were all like in a circle, you know, with one mic and then a couple of mics on the drums.
Uh-huh.
We recorded the track, and then they played that on WABC and let the people decide. So as it turns out, we came into the top handful of bands and tend to have like a battle of the bands. And that year, for some reason, it used to be in a ballroom somewhere. So that year, it was at Carnegie Hall. So here I'm 14 years old. I'm playing at Carnegie Hall with my high school band. There was only one way to go, either, you know, two ways to go, up or down from there. So, you know.
So, later on, when you were with Blondie, you joined the band and said, yeah, you know, I played Carnegie Hall when I was like 14. You know, I've already, you know, I know what the big time's like. Hook your wagon to me and I'll take you there.
Actually, they liked my shoes. I think that's how I got to work with Chris and Debbie originally.
What kind of shoes were you wearing?
I think I had some kind of red shoes on. It was kind of like tailing the glam rock. I was kind of glammed out a little bit.
Ah, okay.
And,
so
you know, we had a mutual admiration for the Stooges and the Velvet Underground and Shangri-Las and things like that. So that's kind of where it went from there.
Well, I was wondering, there was a guy, Billy O'Connor. I mean, this was a guy that drummed before you in Blondie, or how long was he with the group?
Well, I think he was there very briefly.
Yeah.
You know, really what happened was I joined up with the two of them, and Fred Smith from television was playing bass.
Right.
But actually, Fred was playing with Chris and Debbie then. And then soon thereafter, Fred left to join the band Television, and I brought in my high school buddy, Gary Valentine.
That was
kind of the genesis of the band, you know, when we began. And Gary went on to write our first single, Exascender, along with Debbie. And, you know, that's really when the band began. And it was, you know, we were just playing the bars. When I was a kid, I'd be playing, you know, the CYO centers, Jewish community centers, shopping malls, you know, bar mitzvahs, weddings, you name it. But it's always rock and roll, you know?
Yeah, hey, recently, in fact, just a couple of weeks back, I was speaking with Bill Millhiser, the drummer in the Fleshtones.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And he mentioned that he had been sitting in this a diner, and he overheard Keith Strang and Peter Zaremba talking about how you were going to fill in on drums for him. And he overheard these guys talking, and he said, hey, man, I think they're talking about Clem Burke. They must be happening if they're going to be working with Clem Burke. So he said he got up, and he went back to their booth, and he said, hey, you know, I'm a drummer. I'd like to audition for you guys sometimes if you need me. Has he ever told you that you're the reason that he's in the Fleshtones?
Well, I think Phil and I have commiserated about that. You know, one of my other side projects was Foot Squad. We toured with the Fleshtones several times.
Right.
Actually, most recently in France and in the UK. And, you know, Keith Strange is in the Foot Squad with me. The actual first time the Fleshtones were in the recording studio, I played drums on a couple of tracks that on an album called 12 by 5. It kind of featured, I think it was six or seven bands from the whole kind of massive CBGB. Like,
that was on the Red Star label, Marty Towel.
Marty Towel, right. Marty Towel's label. And I think what was the name? Brian Setzer and his brother had a band too that were on that, was on that label. But yeah, I'm on drums on those couple of Fleshtone tracks. No, that was really fortuitous for Bill. Fleshtones are still rocking and rolling. I'm sure you guys have shared Bill's before, right? The blog
of
Fleshtones.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, one of my favorite shows ever, there was Rick Miller from Southern Culture on the Skids had this festival he would curate in North Carolina called Sleaze Fest. It was a bunch of bands every night, but the Fleshtones played right after us, and we had them for a Fleshtones tribute record. We did a version of the instrumental theme from the Vindicators, and so we finished our set with that. They came up and joined us on that song, and then it just segued into the beginning of their set, right? So the music never stopped in between the two bands, and it was, it worked really well, and the playing with those guys is always phenomenal.
Yeah, the Fleshtones are a great band. That Southern Culture on the Skids also a great band that we toured with as well. We did a couple of tours down south with them.
Oh yeah,
it's all about playing the music, you know, to keep going. That's been my kind of attitude, and you know, it's just like to keep playing. As long as I'm playing music that I like with people that I like, I'm happy.
Well, so from the mid-80s, let's say, to late 90s, Blondie wasn't active, and I know you were playing with the Romantics at that point. Was that just one of several bands you were gigging with at the time, or were they the main thing?
Well, I did have quite a long tenure with the Romantics, which is how Wally Palmer and I became good friends.
Yeah.
Right when Blondie took our hiatus or whatever we did, I'm not sure if we split up or if we just said bye-bye for a while and see you in 20 years or something like that. But, you know, I formed a band with another one of your DJs, Michael DeBar. You know, we had a band called Checkered Test, and we actually did a U.S. tour supporting Little Steven and the Disciples of Souls for the Voice of America album. We were both on a label, EMI America, at the time, so... Yeah, you know, it goes back quite a way with Steven, so it's amazing that we have a working relationship now for the Empty Hearts and the second album. So it's all good. It's amazing. It's a small world, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. How did you meet Michael? How did that start?
Well, I met Michael through a mutual friend who was our bass player in Blondie, the second bass player, Nigel Harrison.
Okay.
He was in a band called Silverhead with Michael, a glam rock band.
Right. That's it.
Yeah.
It's
a lot of things are connected. You know Michael through the years. I think I actually played on a couple of tracks that Michael was putting out in recent times. I think I played on You Gotta Serve Somebody.
Oh, yeah.
Funny, you know, how that goes. I'm kind of like the reverse Spinal Tap, you know, drummer. It seems like I'm the drummer that's replacing the drummer. I don't know. It's kind of crazy. But yeah, no.
Clem Burke, do not spontaneously combust on stage. Okay?
Hopefully not. Although, you know, it wouldn't be the worst thing to kind of pass away on stage, I suppose.
It would be exciting. Yeah.
Hopefully that won't happen. I think we're all going to live forever anyway, aren't we, man?
Well, you're doing a pretty good job of it right now, so you're my example. Well, you know, I was mentioning the Romantics, and you said that's how, you know, you and Wally Palmer became good friends, because this week our coolest song of the world is The Best That I Can, and it's off the upcoming Empty Hearts album titled The Second Album. I was trying to figure out if that relationship that you had with Wally, is that how you got into the Empty Hearts, or how did the band get formed, and how did you become part of it?
Well, before the band formed, we were all mutual friends, the four of us. Andy from his guitar shop in Rochester, you know, Andy has a great shop now called Fab Gear, but prior he worked at another guitar shop in Rochester that whenever any musician was in Rochester, inevitably he'd wind up in Andy's music store.
Right.
So, and then Andy and Wally were good friends. And Elliot and I have known each other since the Cars Blondie days. And briefly, we tried to start a band, over 10 years ago with the departed Doug Feiger from Knack. So Elliot and I always kind of talked about working together in some way, shape, or form. And Andy was really the main prime mover to get the band, everybody on the same page, to actually get together to play. But we've all been friends. We all knew each other. There were no real surprises, you know, as far as kind of like a friendship, which is really about what it was like back in the day, you know, really kind of started a band with your friends, you know, when I was a kid, but my other friends, and the kind of like whole Empty Hearts experience is kind of reminiscent of that in a lot of ways.
Yeah, cool. Well, so this coolest song in the world this week, the best that I can, my notes say it's a group composition. So how did you guys come up with that one?
Well, that one really kind of came out of thin air. You know, like when we go into the studio, that was somewhat prepared, but then there's always the inevitability of a jam.
Yeah.
That's kind of how that song came about. And I think maybe Elliot had a riff going on it, and, you know, we built the song from there. You know, once we all get on the same page of the vibe of the song, we kind of all know what each other's going to do. It's almost like telepathy, you know, and so we kind of can fall into that. You know how it is with a band when people have been playing with for a while. And
yeah.
So that really came about that way. I think, you know, Wally came up with most of the lyrics in the end, but the band, the Empty Hearts, is a very collaborative effort in general, and that's one of the great things about it, you know. And yeah, and then, you know, we have a guest on that one. I used to know him as Teddy Zigzag. Teddy Andreas plays the Hammond organ on that track.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, we used Teddy on quite a few of the tracks.
Mm-hmm.
He's playing some Mellotron later on some other tracks on the album that you'll hear when the album comes out. And, of course, on the first album, we had a guest organist, you know, the great departed Ian McLaughlin, you know, Matt from the Faces and the Small Faces.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then, of course, we have a very, very special Ringo Starr plays drums on.
I'm going to ask you about Ringo in a moment, but still about this particular song, The Best I Can. I was wondering, have you guys even had a chance to ever play that out live?
Well, no. I mean, unfortunately, you know, the band really was designed to be a live performing band. And for one reason or another, over the years that we've been together now, we really haven't done that many live shows. We did do a brief tour of Japan, and we, you know, played some shows in California. We played, I think, with B.B. King's in New York a couple of times. But no, we haven't been able to perform any of these songs live, which is what this album is kind of predicated on. We were preparing to put some effort into touring in, you know, in the fall. But, of course, because of everything being postponed and canceled, that's not an option right now, along with quite a few other things I had in the works. You know, there's going to be a whole bunch of Blondie stuff in the summer and in the early fall.
For this stuff with the Empty Hearts, is there any way for you guys to try and do things where you're streaming live, or because you're in different places that doesn't seem likely, or how do you feel about that kind of performing?
Yeah, well, I think that would definitely be a good thing to do. You know, we've done a handful of videos so people can get an idea of the band. Yeah, I mean, it remains to be seen where this is all going to go with, you know, how things are going to proceed with the situation at hand. That would definitely be a cool thing to do a Zoom concert or something. I think you're going to start seeing more and more of that, obviously. You know, people are doing, you know, Jesse Mallon, another of my buddies that's on the station, you know, has been doing that broadcast from the basement of his club. You know, lots of people are on the air, on the internet doing shows. So it seems like it might be the inevitable thing to do at some point. I hope so. We were really looking forward to getting out and doing like shows across the country. You know, we had a bunch of stuff booked, and what are you going to do? This is the longest I've been home in the time, you know, the whole time I've been a musician, I think. It's crazy.
Well, let's see. You mentioned one of the special guests on the upcoming album, Ringo Starr. He plays on the single Remember Days Like These. So did you ever get a chance to hang out with Ringo? Because I think for that recording, his tracks were just sent over. But have you ever been able to hang out with him at all?
I actually did a little thing for the designer John Varvatos with Ringo. Was the kind of face of one of the seasons of John Varvatos' fashion line. And we did this video where Ringo had his drums set up outside by the swimming pool, and there was a handful of drummers walking in and out of the set, you know, including like Trey Cool and Jim Keltner, of course, along with a lot of other people, Steven Tyler, a bunch of people. So, yeah, we got to hang out with Ringo, you know, all the day during that shoot. So, yeah, it was great, you know, just making a lot of fresh juice.
Here's something I want to tell, when you mentioned Jim Keltner, so my wife grew up in Los Feliz, and the Keltners were in the same neighborhood. And his wife, I guess, was the Cub Scout leader or Girl Scout leader, I can't remember.
Right.
And so the rumor, she said, in the neighborhood, because they had the gold records, you know, in the house, that all the kids were like, oh, Ringo Starr really didn't play drums on the Beatles records. It was Mr. Keltner. You know, how they had confused the fact that he had played, you know, I guess with John Lennon.
With
Right. But they, in their minds, you know, he's the real drummer in the Beatles. I want to know, Clem, you let Ringo sit there on the drum throne. You let him rule from the drum throne. And I completely understand that. Is there any other drummer living, active today, that you would allow to sit on the drum throne in your place?
Oh, gee, I'm sure. Tino Donnelly, maybe.
Okay, yeah.
Play with Steven. Charlie, I actually got to sit on Charlie Watson's drums with some. I met Charlie and hung out with him in Seattle. He was such a gentleman. It was amazing. I got to check out his drum kit quite extensively. Yeah, I mean, there's so many great, there's no shortage of good musicians in this world, you know.
Well, let me ask you, do you consider Hal Blaine and like Earl Palmer to be influences of yours?
Oh, absolutely. They're the almost the foremost influences.
What did those guys teach you?
Well, how to play for the songs, how to be a gentleman. I mean, I was actually pretty close to Earl last 10 years or so of his life. And, you know, at the time, you know, unbeknownst to most of us, you know, they were playing on a lot, talking about Keltner. I don't think that's true about him replacing Ringo, but certainly both Hal and Earl played on many, many hit records. Beach Boys, obviously the Ronettes records, Earl's on River Deep Mountain High, and I think Earl played in the Beefeaters, you know, the predecessor to the Byrds. And,
right.
You know, all the Little Richard stuff, all the Earl Palmer played on the Eddie Cochran, you know, Something Else and things like that. You know, Hal played on Pet Sounds. And but, you know, you really weren't paying attention to the credits, although I think a lot of times those musicians weren't credited, you know, the Wrecking Crew, for instance. You know, I came to work with Don Randy, the pianist, one of the pianists from the Wrecking Crew, Nancy Sinatra's musical director as well. I learned a lot from Don, and that's how I got to meet Hal many times. But Earl was really amazing. He used to do a little gig every Tuesday night, and I used to go and see him, and it was like a clinic every time, and it was just amazing. You know, his elegance, his musicianship, the way he treated people. Of course, Hal's a little more sarcastic and cynical than Earl, but they were both great, great people. And, you know, one night I was watching Earl Palmer play in this little club called Chadney's out by NBC, and lo and behold, in walk Keltner, Tim Keltner, and Charlie Watts. And they, of course, when you watch a drummer, the best thing to do is to watch it from the side. Because when you're looking straight on, you really can't see what the drummer's doing, can you? So basically, they set up a table right next to Earl, so you were looking at Earl playing the drums and Charlie and Jim Keltner basically staring at Earl. So you got this image of all of that. And when I met Charlie last summer, we spoke about that, and he was like, couldn't believe I had been at that little gig that Earl did, you know. So I can't even say how much stuff I learned from Charlie and Ringo and Earl and Hal. You know, they're really the Keith Moon. Everyone says, you know, the Keith Moon influence, which is there, but in the end, Keith showed me what not to do, you know? I didn't want to self-destruct.
Yeah.
Keith is one of my big drumming heroes, too.
Well, it seems like in the BC era, the before COVID era, you were always on the go playing gigs with all sorts of bands, all sorts of projects. You seem like a guy that's got, you know, a ton of energy. What are you doing now that you can't play out?
Well, I have my little studio, so I can play the drums, you know, keeping my chops up. And I'm a big believer in health and in exercise, so I'm still doing that. I get to go up and run around in the hills and self-isolate, but also kind of stay active at the same time. And I've been, you know, for quite some time, I've been working on my memoir, which is almost a cliche. I think every so-called been there, done that musician seems to have a book. But, you know, I've been working on mine for quite some time, and I was collaborating with an English guy called Chris Charlesworth, who wrote quite a few books on The Who, was the editor of Melody Maker back when. You know, I've been working on the book, but it's hard to get inspiration in some ways. You know, I'm just trying to stay on an even keel. I make sure I watch the BBC News at 5 o'clock, you know, keep me in touch with the world. I recommend listening to the BBC News as opposed to the generic network news in the United States. It's much more insightful and it gives you a better handle on the world at large, because we are all members of the world. You know, it's not, we're not isolated. You know, it's one world now.
Well, you mentioned working on your memoir. Tell me about this documentary that came out, I think last year, My View, The Beat That Drove Blondie. You don't have a memoir out yet, but you do have a documentary. That's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of like a behind the music kind of thing without the sex and drugs, more or less. I'll keep that for the book. But great that Sky Arts, subscription television company in the UK, Sky Sports and Sky News, Sky Arts, people might be familiar with that.
Right.
They commissioned a documentary about me. So it's like a year in the life. It's not really my childhood onward. It's just kind of like I was doing a lot that year. Started out in Hyde Park, playing to about 70,000 people with Blondie, and took me to doing a Speedle convention that I've done with this other band, the Material Waves, who've also had song of the week,
that's right,
song in the world at one time,
yeah,
the Wrecking Crew song, which is,
yeah,
was I actually got to play that for Hal and right before he passed, and for and for Don Randy, and actually went to a Wrecking Crew / Glenn Campbell, Hal Blaine celebration a while back, and they actually showed the video of the Wrecking Crew. It was really touching. I couldn't believe that they honored us in such a way, where they really kind of, similar to like Ringo playing on the record. I mean, these kind of the real gratifying things, at this point in my life, having the Wrecking Crew, surviving Wrecking Crew members recognize the song and actually play it at one of their performances, play the video and have their audience hear the song was pretty amazing. But, so it's a fun thing. I actually have it up on my Twitter right now. It's played around film festivals, and they were trying to get it placed in one of the stations here in the States, one of the subscription stations. But coming out of the UK, I think, the reputation of the band Blondie is so huge. It's really our biggest audience is the UK and really pretty much Europe in general, even though strange, in the States we've had so much success, but the United States, as is such a big place. So Sky Arts commissioned it, and if anyone's interested, they can find it on Twitter right now. I kind of unofficially posted it, they're still trying to do something with it, but I thought in the light of everything that's going on, I think there's people some entertainment if they're so interested, it was great to do it, and then I did a T-Rex tribute at City Winery in New York, and that was filmed for the documentary. All kinds of little bits and pieces of what I did during that year. So, it's great that it exists. I'm really happy with it.
Well, hey, I have heard you referred to as the Doctor of Rock. Maybe that's even in the trailer for the documentary. But anyway,
yeah,
the Doctor of Rock, and I'm wondering, does that have anything to do with this 8-year study that was analyzing the physical and psychological effects of drumming? Like a couple of UK universities were doing this research, and they gave you an honorary doctorate, I think, as well.
Yeah, I was, believe it or not, I was due to get another one this coming October from Chichester University. The last one was awarded by Gloucestershire University. But it has to do with a Blondie fan, a gentleman called Dr. Marcus Sutton, who was one time the UK Olympic boxing coach, and he's a sports medicine professor, doctor, and I was playing at Wembley Arena, and he had sent me a letter, so I met with him, and he kind of outlined what his thoughts were about doing a kind of an analogy between sport and drumming, which is very obvious,
Yeah.
Especially as we get older, any musical instrument in effort, really work at, keep it going, which is why I'm into health and fitness much, so I'm able to do my gig. So, it was going to be a one-off thing, and 8+ years later, I think it's been about over 10, 15 years now, they came up with a doctorate. I mean, they came up with a thesis, I should say, and then they awarded me a doctorate. Due to my participation, they awarded me a doctorate. And, I'm the namesake of the project called the Klemmenberg Drumming Project. People can see that online as well. Of course, everything's online, so there you go. But, yeah, that's in the documentary as well. So that was great to give an overview of that.
Let me ask you something about this. So drumming's very physical. You've had this study that's going on, and you made this comparison to sports. But something that's not uncommon with drummers is like, what is it, carpal, whatever it is, they're
carpal tunnel.
You haven't had to face any of that kind of problem, or is that something that's kind of like a concern that might develop, or?
I was examined for it some time ago, and I don't really have any problems. I'm a true believer that the so-called fountain of youth can only be found through physical fitness. I mean, obviously I'm not the most muscle-bound or, physically fit person, specimen in the world, but it really does help, you know, especially with drumming. And I realized that early on. Like I said, when you see the self-destruction of someone like Keith Moon or Bonham, you know, it's really hard for him, you know. And of course, in retrospect, you can say, well, why couldn't they be helped, or why didn't this happen, why didn't that happen? But it's a different time and place. So, you know, I always kind of knew if I wanted to be able to keep doing this, I would have to try to stay as healthy. It's almost a responsibility, you know. You want to give the audience your best, you know. And I mean, I don't really have too many aches and pains, but, you know, I'll give it another 18 months. I've been saying it since the 70s, you know. So we'll see. It's a privilege to be able to play music at this point in my life, and I really appreciate it. And, you know, the Empty Hearts album is almost like such a great gift to the other members of the band, really, that we were able to come together and do this. And, of course, Steven was very helpful in having the record come out with his help and all that. It's great.
Well, I think Steven's responsible for suggesting the title of the group, isn't he?
Yeah, he did. You know, he also, we co-wrote a Christmas song with Steven a couple of years ago, too.
That's right.
It was funny. We put on the phone while we were writing the song. So we say, well, what do you think of this bridge, Steven? Or what about, you know, there should be a drum break here? And he's like on the speakerphone, like writing the song with us. It was really fun.
Oh, very cool. Well, you know what? We need to take a listen to another track off the upcoming album from the Empty Hearts, the second album. It's available now as a digital single, and it is appropriately titled The World's Gone Insane. And I've seen a video for it that's got like some very recent events highlighted in it, but I'm betting the insanity that helped create the song is you know, a little quaint compared to the insanity of the last few weeks, or am I wrong? When did you guys write The World's Gone Insane?
Right, well, The World's Gone Insane, you know, that's another one of the songs that kind of came out of thin air, as I mentioned about The Best That I Can Do. We recorded it probably over a year ago, and we were just jamming on that riff, and when we kind of completed it and that we had a basic track, I just kind of said, you know, we should just call this song The World's Gone Crazy, you know. And of course, it got adapted to The World's Gone Insane, and of course, there was no shortage of insanity while we were recording it, but little did we know how profound that statement would have become in light of modern times now. And the one thing I don't want people to think we're kind of jumping on a bandwagon of negativity, let's say, but, you know, we were feeling these things were obviously, there's plenty wrong with this country right now, unfortunately. I don't want to get on a bandwagon about it, but, you know, hoping the election will give us some relief in November, but remains to be seen. But, you know, the whole mention of the conflicting news reports and just everything that had happened thus far, you know, in the world, and how we were feeling kind of just kind of got elaborated in to this song. You know, it's a rock. It's funny, these two songs almost like a specific genre. You know, they're kind of atypical of a lot of the other music on the album. So it's interesting that we're showcasing these two songs first prior to release of the album, which is coming out, I think, August 28th.
That's right, August 28th, yeah. Both of the tunes are very rocking and very driving.
Right. Which is very much one side of the band. There's also some, you know, more lighter acoustic, not acoustic music, but with 12 strings. I think the B side of the first single we released, very reminiscent of the Byrds, and, you know, and it's almost like feel like we're the last band standing in a way. I mean, we really kind of like want to make people aware of the music that, you know, the brilliant music that came before, you know, and especially for kids, you know. I don't think bands, Elliot's such a master guitarist, and, you know, just the whole band is just really based on certain musicality and certain influences that really stand out. And, you know, we got a lot of compliments on the last album, so hopefully this one will, some people will enjoy it, which is really what it's all about.
Well, Clem, thank you so much for talking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
All right, Manfred. Thanks, buddy, and I hope to see you in the real world sometime again and see the Woggles out on stage along with all the other great bands out there. So peace and love to everyone out there, and thanks for listening.
Well, let's hear that other track off the Empty Hearts upcoming album. It's called the second album, due out August the 28th. Here's a track, The World's Gone Insane, in Little Steven's Underground Garage. We'll be right back.
Gone Insane. That's the Empty Hearts off their upcoming full-length titled Second Album, due out Friday, August the 28th on Wicked Cool Records. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to the band's drummer, Clem Burke, for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Olivia Callahan for producing our segment. And join me next week when we'll check in with Chris Rogers of Chris Rogers and the Dirty Gems. They've got a brand new single out, and it's titled She Likes to Party. We'll chat about that and see how the group is faring in these pandemic times. That's your next Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Stephen's Underground Garage.
As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe in Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock Cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com. Don't let it slide, baby, diamond ring.